Two Gestapo officials were here to arrest me. The nurse had already left and returned with a clean sheet as they pulled me to my feet, and the three of them proceeded to wrap it around my bloodied clothes. Then they led me from the room with its awful tableau. The nurse relocked the door and went the other way. None of them uttered a word. One last unforgivable sin against my Tildy. She was erased from this world without fanfare, like a death had not occurred. I realized that I was under arrest as they loaded me still silently into the back of their vehicle and set themselves on either side of me, then motioned to the driver to set off towards Berlin. Who but my damn former colleague Bernheim would have set me up like this? The first word either of them spoke was when one of them asked me where I lived. Well, I told him. He instructed the driver to go there, and reaching my apartment, they instructed me to clean up, change, and bring a suitcase of my necessities. It looked as if I was to be away from my home for a while, and at least I was not going to be shot right away in some alley. With my case stowed in the trunk, I was ushered into the back of the car and we set off once again. As we drove back into Berlin, I was formulating my plan to destroy Hitler. I needed to undermine his egomania, his overbearing sense of superiority, and to plant the seed of doubt into his subconscious and get them to germinate and grow. I would use my old Professor Freud's technique, simple coercion by continual subtle delivery of keywords into our conversation that would impinge upon his subconscious without his awareness. In that way, I would soften him up, slowly converting his sense of strength into one of weakness and finally get him onto that slippery downward slope to self-destruction. Eventually, we arrived at the Reichskanzlerie and I was taken through the gardens at the back up to a narrow entrance leading down to an underground complex that I was told was the Führer Bunker. It had been Hitler's Berlin headquarters since the beginning of the year. Sounds of Wagner's music drifted up from below as we descended the narrow stone stairs. When we were deep underground, I suspected I was to meet once more with the man I had vowed to kill. In spite of the loyalty I held to my hypocritic oath as a physician, suddenly we were face to face. My escorts left without a further word.
Welcome to the Führer Bunker. This is my new home. Yours too. So, we may at last continue our therapy sessions.
The bunker complex was well furnished with fine carpets and oil paintings hanging on the walls. Passages led off to other accommodations and facilities. But being below the water table, it was prone to dampness, and the pumping system ran constantly to remove groundwater that collected in a sump tank. As for my host, I saw at once that he was ailing. He was infirm, and his gait was shuffling. He held his left arm that shook uncontrollably behind his back. His weakness triggered an idea, a twisted use of lessons I've learned from Freud against their therapeutic intent, a subliminal technique.
I found you again thanks to our friend Bernheim. You were a great disappointment to me, Doctor, continuing to avoid me like that, without warning and leaving no messages when you changed your address.
I'm sorry. I can't tell. Seeing you're on knees, it's best that we're together now. My practice diminished and I moved to a smaller apartment, further from the city center. I needed time to myself and to keep in touch with my aging family.
These are difficult times, and certain people must remain at their posts. Because of my strength, I haven't needed you always, but when I need you, you must be prepared to serve.
We all have moments of weakness, and my mother was sick and failing. Then I found out I could not leave Berlin to visit her.
That I can understand. And now?
My mother died and I've arranged care back in Sweden for my aging father.
Perhaps you started again to look for your former love, the famous and beautiful Miss Manleifen.
I could have strangled him. For a moment, I genuinely thought it through. How long could I squeeze before his personal guards burst in? If I was to die, I wanted to be certain that he went with me. Instead, I forced myself to utter the awful truth, less than 2 hours old. She's dead. I no longer wish to hear her name.
Yeah. I see you are looking at this left arm of mine. It shakes, yeah.
You are human, fragile as the rest of us. There is no shame in the weakness of a human body.
They tried to assassinate me. Again. This time they might have succeeded, but once more I had my divine protection while those around me perished. They have been trying to kill me since 1932 and have never succeeded. They shall never succeed. I shall kill myself before any of them shall do so. Do you understand me, Doctor?
I knew then that my task to destroy Hitler would be easier once he had voiced the possibility of his own suicide. Of course, mein Führer.
I had 7,000 arrested after last July's treasonous bombing attempt on my life. 7,000. Almost 5,000 of them have now been executed. That's how I deal with treachery and betrayal, Doctor.
Surely not all of those can have been...
Guilty? Of course they were guilty. If I say they were guilty, they were guilty.
You're right, my Führer. The more they betray you, the more adamant you must be to destroy them. Even to the last man.
You see, now you agree with my methods. Do you know that I am protected by even the youth of Germany? Young angels ready to die for their Führer. That is loyalty, Doctor. Even from kindergarten, they rise up in my defense. The Red Army may be approaching Berlin, but they'll meet with a blazing fire of young Germanic intensity that will destroy them before they can impinge upon our resolve for greater Germany.
The younger they are, the more love, respect, and loyalty they will have. What they lack in physical strength, they will provide in spiritual fortitude, much as you do in your weakened state. His lack of rebuttal was striking. A few years prior, such a comment would have sent him into a rage. The sounds of the Russian army advancing from the east and the north became ever more evident during the brief periods I was permitted to walk with him and his beloved German shepherd bitch, Blondie, in the garden above my subterranean cell-like quarters. Our therapy sessions hardly classified as such academically, being given more to my listening to his ravings about Valhalla and reincarnation and his positive plans for the future in spite of the overwhelming odds against this ever happening, getting worse day by day. So what do you suppose the Russian will do when they get here? I fear for the city's women and children. The Russian soldiers are not as moral and disciplined as yours, mein Führer. To say the least, they're savages.
They can't get here. They never get here. I am impregnable.
It was just the two of us. There was no audience. This conversation was not being broadcast. Yet he still maintained his fanatical bluster, playing to the back row of the theater, even with an audience of one. But just supposing they do reach this bunker, we are in an increasingly weakened position, are we not? What do you suppose will be the fate of the women and the children? Have you considered what they will do to you?
You never listen to me, Doctor. Did I not say we are impregnable? Heaven itself might collapse upon us. We shall remain safe within its folds. I and the thousand-year Reich shall triumph over all opposition.
In fact, he'd only say he was impregnable. He turned and shuffled off, speaking to one of the domestic attendants passing by.
Have someone show Dr. Dromir to his quarters.
After a couple of weeks, cloistered, certainly held against my will, with the Führer and various of his close associates, including the Goebbels family, Joseph, his wife, six children, five small daughters and a young son, I began to experience symptoms that at first I put down to the food we were being served. It was not particularly good and was being prepared in the cramped and damp environment in which we existed. Hitler, whose diet was vegetarian, seemed not to be affected. His vegetarian choice was a contradiction that perhaps troubled me all the more for his insistence it was out of concern for animal suffering. Unwinding that alone would be enough to drive me mad. Regardless, I continued to experience diarrhea, blurring of my vision, and constant skin irritation. I came to realize that it was me alone, and I was being poisoned slowly, and the symptoms were those of slow poisoning with arsenic. Such poisoning could only be administered in food or beverages. So I stopped taking coffee and tea, if it served to me individually, and I avoided food that could only have been purposely tainted for my consumption. And I immediately realized Hitler's intent. He, of course, had been obsessing over what his enemies would do to him when they reached his bunker. It was when, now, not if, he would not be taken alive. If he was going to be driven finally to commit suicide, those now around him, his loyal followers, would have to follow suit or be murdered in mutual suicide pacts. As he could not rely on my compliance, he was killing me slowly and probably getting considerable malign satisfaction while doing so. On April 16th, we heard that the Red Army had surrounded the outskirts of Berlin, and emotional tension among the inhabitants of the bunker, except for Hitler, increased. Conversations became stilted and brief. Temper were on the edge. Only the quiet background music of Wagner or Beethoven softly filled the prolonged silence that were pervasive. By this time, I had become cautious of anything I ate unless it was being generally consumed. Even then, I ate and drank sparsely. On April the 20th, the Red Army began shelling Berlin. They could only be days away from our refuge. It happened to be Hitler's 56th birthday, and I allowed myself to enjoy some of his special birthday cake and the other treats being served at our communal, though restrained, celebration. Subsequent days passed in rapid succession while my symptoms continued unabated and I was in fear of my survival. Somehow, I had to stop ingesting the poison I was being fed. And during this time, Martin Bormann, Hitler's private secretary, found a willing drinking partner in Hermann Fiegelein, a lieutenant general in the Waffen-SS attached to the bunker staff. A close associate of Himmler, he had been married for less than a year to Gretel Braun, Eva's sister, so he was now her brother-in-law. As morale in our tightly closed community continued to deteriorate, those two officers made good use of their time invading the wine storage area. And starting early in the mornings, they were in a state of half inebriation most of the day. And Gretel was on the verge of giving birth to the first child, and as a consequence, Herman had little time for her. Meanwhile, she and Eva remained tightly bonded as loving sisters. By April 27, Berlin was cut off from the rest of Germany as Hitler's reserve forces failed to push back the Red Army. It was that day that Hitler realized Fugelein was not at his post in the Führer bunker. It was a fact that among his colleagues, Fugelein was nicknamed Flegelein, pertaining to the German word Flegel, an impertinent lout.
Where's Flegelein? Find the impertinent lout, bring him here to me!
Later that day, a disheveled, half-drunk Fugelein was brought back to the bunker to face Hitler. He was put into a locked cell, while his captors reported to their Führer. He had been found at his Berlin apartment half-drunk, civilian clothes with a quantity of cash and jewelry, some of which belonged to Eva, in preparation of fleeing to Sweden or Switzerland, having been unwilling to engage in any suicide pact that he was at least wise enough to know was coming. From papers found in his briefcase, it appeared that his close associate, SS Reichsführer Himmler, was currently in secret peace negotiations with Western allies. The following day, the 28th, Hitler heard of a BBC radio report confirming that Himmler had indeed been negotiating with the allies for peace terms. And this was perhaps the cruelest insult of all to him.
That rat Himmler! Have him arrested immediately and bring him here to me. I'll deal with him right here. As for Fugelein, that deserted, cooperating with the rat, I'll have him court-martialed. Set it up now, today, right now, here and now. I hereby strip him of all ranks and honors. Get on with it!
At a rapid convened court-martial headed by General Monk, Hermann Fugelein was found guilty of desertion and sentenced to death. Despite the pleading of his sister-in-law Eva, Hitler remained adamant that the sentence should be carried out immediately. Fugelein was taken up to the garden and shot in the back of the head. A few minutes later, without any sign or shred of emotion, Hitler told me he needed to speak to me privately.
Dominik, you and I have always been close. You've been inside my head, for heaven's sake. What can I do for Eva? She knows Fugelein had to be dealt with, but she's upset for her sister's sake.
Well, marry her, Adolf. She will make you whole. He'd started letting me call him Adolf in front of other people. No one commented on it, but it was the surest sign of his descent. Perhaps it made him feel good, like we were actually friends.
Here?
Yes. As your enemies approach, of course you will eventually defeat them. But it's quite romantic, don't you think?
You know the mind of women as well, Doctor.
The Greeks believed that when two people are married, should they die, they travel to the underworld together. I had no idea if that was true. I just made it up on the spot. An appeal to Hitler's love of ancient mythology. One last little punch off the edge of his psychological roof.
Very well. Eva and I are to be married tonight. A quiet ceremony with just the witnesses present. Yeah.
I'm very pleased for you both. They had been married for some 30 hours before the following night, in the early hours of April the 30th. heard a gunshot. I was told later in the day by Joseph Goebbels that the Fuhrer and Eva had committed suicide. I had to admit, I took a grim but significant satisfaction in the death, and a cruel smile tugged at my lips. True to his earlier pronouncement, Hitler has shot himself after seeing Eva take a fatal dose of cyanide and having swallowed the same himself. He had foreseen his and her likely treatment had they fallen into the hands of the Russians. Simple assassinations would not have been sufficient to satisfy the invaders' vengeful ambitions. Things were getting worse when I found out later in the day that I had been locked inside my quarters. On the second day of May, a guard brought me food on a tray and informed me that Goebbels' family were gone. When I asked where, he pointed his forefinger heavenwards and crossed himself. All dead, he said. The parents had apparently poisoned their 6 small children and then committed suicide. I asked him, what about those who still remain? He said they were all planning to break out towards the west, hoping to surrender to the Americans rather than face the vengeful Russians. What about me? I asked. He replied that he had been given orders to keep me in prison, and he left me with a parting remark. It's better for you if the Russians find you as a prisoner, then maybe they will let you out. I asked him, why should I not break out with the rest? To which he replied, and be shot, as the rest of us probably will. He made a good case for my remaining as a prisoner. Even if I was slowly dying from being poisoned, at least I would not be served any more deadly food. Starvation seemed a better option. Here, now, reflecting on my all too short but at times painfully long life, I flushed this final serving of food and drink down the toilet, as I've been doing ever since I've been locked in here. I'm getting weaker, but I must avoid dehydration to prolong my ability to survive. I dipped a glass of water from the toilet tank as it refilled, drank it thirstily, and dipped another. Can I survive until the Russians come down here? Or will they just bomb the place from above to make sure there are no survivors? No, surely they will come down to find prisoners and search for documents and booty. Do I know sufficient Russian to engage them? Enough to have them release me and not just shoot me out of hand as an inconvenient obstacle. For all my study of languages when I was young, I found French, German, English easy enough. Why didn't I try harder at Russian? I'm so tired. And when I sleep, I can see Tildy and how she was. So I just need to sleep. To sleep.
The Hitler File is a production of Voyage Media. The series is produced by Nat Mundell, Robert Midas, and Dan Benamor. Directed and produced by Dan Benamor. Written by Desmond Fosbury. Based on the novel, The Dromirek File, by Brandon Rolfe. Starring Peter Stormare as Dr. Dromirek, and Dennis O'Hare as Adolf Hitler. Additional cast credits available in the show notes. Edited, sound designed, and mixed by Nick Misitti. Original music by Derlis Gonzalez. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or anywhere you're listening, and subscribe now for future episodes.